This is edition number 2001 of The Mardler, recorded in Aylsham on Friday, the 23rd of January, 2026. Hello, you are listening to The Mardler, the weekly talking newspaper for North Norfolk. Today we bring you the week's news and views from the North Norfolk News of Thursday, the 22nd of January, 2026. My name is Barbara Calver, and my fellow readers are...
Mary Beattie,
Tony Escrit,
and Ruth Harrison.
On the notice board today, this week the sun will rise around 7:45 and will set at about 4:30.
The magazine supplement will follow a little later in the programme and includes iconic designs in Norfolk churches, the lasting romance of love letters, the tale of Branadunum, and low pollution levels in the River Bure.
But we begin with the main news items, which include plans to scrap A-levels are leaked, proposed council tax rise, stone carver award. But we begin with the main news items, which include plans to scrap A-levels are leaked, proposed council tax rise, stone carver award, bus shelter saga, death following a fall, possession of indecent images, jewellery theft, and an attack in Reefham. Let's start with those lead stories.
Crome School and Sheringham School are known for their centuries-old rivalry. And now a feud between the coastal neighbours has emerged after plans to scrap A-levels at Sheringham Sixth Form were believed to have been leaked early by Cromer Academy. Sheringham High School and Sixth Form, run by Synergy Multi Academy Trust, told their pupils and parents about the shocking news on the afternoon of Wednesday, January 14th. However, it has been said that Cromer Academy ended up spinning the news first, as it rang parents of the affected pupils on that Wednesday morning. In a letter sent out to parents of Sheringham High School and Sixth Form, the head of school, Dawn Hollidge, said they had informed head teachers of other local schools ahead of the announcement so they could prepare support for the affected pupils. But this was under the premise that the information was not shared until they had informed their own students and parents. She said she wrote the letter to express her disappointment that their plans to inform the students and parents had been undermined by the actions of another local school. She added, "Whilst all other head teachers have respected these professional boundaries, unfortunately, one local school chose not to do so, and released information publicly in advance, leading to inaccurate and incomplete information being shared on social media and in the community. Our priority is always to ensure that our students and our parent community receive accurate and timely information directly from us, so that we can provide clarity and answer any questions you may have. It is regrettable that this breach of professional trust has occurred, and I hope that you will take the opportunity to read the communications we have sent out this afternoon in order to address any confusion." While the letter did not reference Cromer Academy directly, parents of children at the school confirmed that they had been called on Wednesday morning. One parent, who does not wish to be named, said, "We were not aware that Sheringham pupils and parents were not being made aware. We fully support and thank Cromer for putting our children's well-being first by informing us when they did. If Sheringham had managed this better, there would have been no leak. Cromer Academy and Synergy MAT have been contacted for comment."
Leaders at Norfolk County Council say council tax will have to rise by 5% again this coming year, the maximum amount the authority can up it without triggering a referendum. The Conservative-run Council's newly unveiled 2026-2027 budget proposals, which include £42.3 million in savings, efficiencies and cuts to help plug a funding gap, are based on a 4.99% hike in the share of people's bills which go to County Hall's coffers. The increase will generate an extra £28.8 million for the council, but will add £87.75 to the annual bill a Band D homeowner pays Norfolk County Council, up from £1,755.63 to £1,843.38. A Band B homeowner will pay an extra £68.25 each year, an increase from £1,365.49 to £1,433.74. It marks the third consecutive year the County Council will have agreed a 5% increase, the maximum possible, in its share of council tax, which includes a percentage ring-fenced for adult social care. But despite the rise, the council's budget also features proposed savings and cuts. That includes savings of £22.1 million from adult social care and £11.4 million from children's services, although council leaders say they are also investing £76.3 million to bring improvements. Much of the savings in adult social care are by focusing on prevention, so people do not end up needing costly residential care. The council is also looking to cut the multi-million pound bill for home-to-school transport by reviewing contracts with transport companies and encouraging students deemed able to travel independently to do so. Norfolk's libraries will stop loaning CDs or DVDs, and fewer hardback books will be bought, while there will be less money for a scheme which awards £500 grants to arts organisations. Andrew Jameson, the council's cabinet member for finance, said the government had left the council little choice but to up its tax share by the maximum amount. He said, "The 4.99% increase was clearly baked into the government's funding assumptions. It is particularly disappointing that the government's approach to fair funding has ultimately removed adjustments for remoteness and placed heavy reliance on council tax for rural shire areas." For Norfolk County Council, 83% of the increase in core spending power expected by government over the next 3 years is assumed to come from local council tax increases. Mr. Jameson said the government had also yet to tackle the £180 million plus deficit the authority has for providing services for children with special educational needs and disabilities. While Chancellor Rachel Reeves has said these costs will be borne by the Department for Education from 2028 to 2029, it has not said how existing deficits will be handled. Mr. Jameson said, "Despite these difficulties, we have delivered a robust and sustainable budget that positions Norfolk to seize opportunities ahead." Brian Watkins, leader of the opposition Liberal Democrat group, said the budget was far from a rosy picture. He said, "The local government system across the country is at breaking point, with much needed reform of council finance still as far away as ever. The council is operating with one hand tied behind its back as it struggles to protect demand services such as adult social care and children's services. Sadly, once again, it will be the council taxpayers of Norfolk who will be the hardest hit by the further hike of 4.99% at a time when many families continue to struggle to make ends meet during the ongoing cost of living crisis. The council's budget will be discussed by the Tory cabinet later this month before full council is asked to agree it in February. Council tax bills in Norfolk are made up of proportions which go to the County Council, the Police and Crime Commissioner, district, borough or city councilled, and in some parts of the county, to town or parish councils. Sarah Taylor, Norfolk's Police and Crime Commissioner, who last year quit Labour to become an independent, has been given consulting over a 4% rise in council tax, which goes to Norfolk Police.
A Norfolk stone carver, whose intricate works are showcased in London's Highgate Cemetery, has been recognised with a top honour. Tusa Wilson, who is based near Aylsham, has been awarded the title of Royal Designer for Industry, RDI, an accolade which can only be held by 200 designers at one time. The title was presented by the Royal Arts Society after he was recommended for his creative stone carving work by caricaturist and ceramicist Roger Law, RDI. Mr. Wilson said, "I feel very honoured to be among such illustrious company." He has been involved in a number of well-known projects, including his work for Norwich Cathedral and a memorial for philanthropist and art collector Sir Joseph Hutong in Highgate Cemetery. Also, he has created a series of pieces around Norfolk based on extracts from the Domesday Book. "I enjoy the commissions. Dealing with clients, building a relationship, and making a design that is very personal," he said. "It feels nice because it's not just a random thing and it's part of the community." Mr. Wilson's passion for art started when he was young, with a career in the creative realm inevitable. When he was deciding what to specialise in, he started a course in stonemasonry, architectural carving and lettering. Afterwards, he worked with Richard Kindersley, a renowned lettering artist, for 5 years, in London, training his eye for the craft. But in 2000, he moved to Norfolk to start his own business with a focus in stone carving and letter cutting. He said, "I thought, I am going to commit myself, and I kept my fingers crossed that I would get enough work. I have never run out of work." Now, run from his workshop in Borough, Mr. Wilson is joined by stone carver Dan Meek and apprentice Mirella McGee, where they make memorial headstones, public art, smaller sculptures for interiors and garden pieces.
The Sheringham bus shelter, which was at the heart of a fierce protest, may be moved, has been revealed. Sheringham Town Council has unanimously agreed to explore new designs to take forward for the site in a station approach in an extraordinary meeting held last Thursday night. And it's been revealed this may include options to relocate or remodel the 1950s bus shelter. It comes after Norfolk County Council's controversial travel hub plans for the site, which included demolishing the much-loved structure, were brought to a halt last month. The bus stop was then suspended from use as the County Council deemed it unsafe due to the number of pedestrians using it, a concern it had outlined in the proposals for the new hub scheme. The Town Council's discussion on the shelter's future was held in a private session, which is when both members of the public and the press were excluded while confidential papers were tabled. However, in its statement released on Friday, it has said the council has discussed possible designs for the site that may form the basis of a way forward. When this paper asked whether all these possible designs include the retention of the bus shelter, a spokeswoman for the town council said, "Options may include consideration of relocating or some remodelling. This is because it is not possible to widen the footpath with the shelter where it is," she said. When further asked whether it would be located further back from its current position to another area on station approach or elsewhere in the town, she said, "We are open to considering all viable options." The town council added that it will liaise with the North Norfolk Railway, the Save Our Shelter Group, other stakeholders and professionals as required on the proposals. Norfolk County Council has confirmed that if the Town Council identifies a way forward that resolves the safety concerns about the narrow pavement by the shelter, it would review what changes may be needed to the previous construction plans. County Hall also said it would then be happy to work with the Town Council to secure additional funding and complete works to provide a transport hub in this location. The Town Council statement said, "Timescales for this are not known at the current time, but we will continue working together to find a resolution as soon as possible. As the situation is reviewed, all Wells and Holt-bound services will continue to use the nearest existing bus stop opposite Tesco."
A retired ground worker died in hospital after a fall at his home, a court has heard. George Fulcher, 86, of Norwich Road, Wroxham, was admitted to the Norfolk and Norwich Hospital, NNN, following an unwitnessed fall. An inquest into his death held at Norfolk Coroner's Court heard he was diagnosed with a broken hip following the incident, but was considered too unwell for surgery. He was put on palliative care and died on November 24th last year. A statement read to the court from Mr. Fulcher's daughter said he had been cared for at home after becoming unwell with heart failure. His condition worsened around 3 weeks before his death and he became severely dehydrated. In her conclusion, Area Coroner Yvonne Blake said, "Mr. Fulcher has died from an accident contributed to by natural causes." In an online tribute, his family described him as a dearly loved husband, much loved father, treasured grandpa and cherished great-grandpa, who would be greatly missed by family and friends. To read all obituaries and tributes, join the Facebook group Norfolk's Loved and Lost.
A man could be jailed after admitting possession of almost 50,000 indecent images and videos of children. William Cotton, aged 60, was arrested in October 2023 after the discovery of child sex images and extreme porn on devices belonging to him. Norwich Magistrates Court heard the offences included 48,660 Category C photos and films, together with others deemed to be Category A, the most serious, that involves sex acts and penetration. Cottam of Purdy Way, Aylsham, pleaded guilty to 5 offences, including 3 of making indecent images and 1 of possessing a prohibited image of a child. He also admitted possessing 2 extreme pornographic images involving a dog. Magistrates adjourned his sentencing until January the 29th after being told the terms of a proposed sexual harm prevention order, a SHPO, which had not been disclosed to his legal team in time. Cotton was granted bail with conditions to have no contact with children and not to possess any internet-enabled device unless it could retain the Browning history and could be made available for inspection by police.
Benton's Jewellers in Cromer was the scene of both a break-in and a theft in the summer, with one incident recorded in July and the next one just the following month. 2 men, both aged in their 30s, have now been arrested in connection with the incident on July the 8th, which saw significant damage caused to the door and a number of items were stolen. Both were arrested on suspicion of 5 counts of burglary and 1 count of making off without payment. The second man was also arrested on suspicion of importing a controlled drug. They were taken to Aylsham Police Investigation Centre for questioning and have both been released on bail until March the 2nd. The jewellery shop was then targeted again on August the 27th when a man and a woman entered the property and stole a piece of jewellery. A woman aged in her 50s has been arrested on suspicion of 2 counts of theft and 1 count of burglary. She was taken to a Luton custody centre for questioning until released on bail until January the 26th.
An investigation is ongoing after a man suffered a head injury in an attack in Reefham. Emergency services, including police and ambulance, were called to a property on Station Road at about 4:30 p.m. on Friday. It's believed that 2 attackers were involved and were wearing overalls as well as some sort of ski masks. A spokesperson for East of England Ambulance Service said, "An ambulance was sent to the scene and transported one patient, an adult man, to hospital for further treatment." Neighbours in the town described hearing of the attack as awful, with one local saying, "This sort of thing doesn't happen in Reefham that often." Another neighbour said they found out what happened online, while a third mentioned seeing a police van in the area. A spokesperson for Norfolk Police confirmed they were investigating the incident after being called to reports of an altercation involving 3 people. The force added, "Inquiries are being made to trace the other 2 people involved. Anyone with information should contact us, reference investigation 36/3650/26.
Our next few news stories include sex offender court, community effort, new Broads authority chief, planning issues, crab company compensation, pensioner facing jail, tributes for firefighter, and concern for patients.
A convicted sex offender was caught with more than 1,500 indecent images of children while being monitored after his release from prison for a similar offence. Anthony Beresford was being supervised by the police's Public Protection Unit, PPU, following his release from a 14-month sentence imposed in 2020 for indecent images offences. Norwich Crown Court heard that when officers visited him in July 2022, they discovered he had an account on the KIK social media chat app, as well as a laptop, which was in breach of a sexual harm prevention order, SHPO, imposed as part of his 2020 sentence. Peter Gare, prosecuting, said there were 359 Category A images, the most serious, as well as 612 Category B images and 552 Category C images on the device. The defendant of Hall Lane, North Walsham, appeared at court on Thursday, January 15th, after he admitted the indecent images offences as well as breaching his SHPO. Judge David Pugh said Beresford, who has set up a business selling 1980s computer equipment online, had accessed vast numbers of indecent images of children. But imposing a 14-month prison sentence, suspended for 24 months, Judge Pugh accepted the offending had been more than 3 years ago and had not been repeated since. Andrew Oliver, mitigating, said Beresford had uploaded images to his phone but had not realised they were on the laptop. "He thought the images uploaded to his phone had been deleted," said Mr. Oliver. But Mr. Oliver said he accepted the offences and had shown insight into his offending. The barrister said the offences were committed more than 3 years ago, at a time when he was going through a separation from his wife. Mr. Oliver said Beresford was accessing social media into the very early hours, which had been the trigger for this offending. Beresford was ordered to undertake 180 hours unpaid work, up to 15 days rehabilitation activity requirement, RAR, and an accredited program of up to 26 sessions. He was also put on the Sex Offenders Register for 10 years and made the subject of a SHPO also for 10 years.
A community raffle has raised more than £4,000 for a theatre's bid to get a new cinema screen. The fundraiser, organised by Sheringham's Blythe and Wright, raised £4,282 for Sheringham Little Theatre and will help the charity-run venue replace its ageing cinema screen. Chris Wright, director at Blythe and Wright, said, "It was a real community effort. With 127 prizes donated by suppliers, customers and members of the public, the raffle reached a climax with a fun evening at the theatre on Saturday, January the 13th. Norfolk entertainer Ollie Day took to the stage entertaining the audience with a mix of music, magic and comedy, involving a self-penned novelty song in the style of the singing postman. Mr. Day praised the business for giving community support to the theatre, which was vital at a time when many venues were struggling to survive. The remaining raffle tickets were drawn at Blythe and Wright's Station Road shop the following day. Debbie Thompson, director of Sheringham Little Theatre, said, "We always welcome support from businesses and individuals through sponsorship, legacies, donations, community fundraising, becoming a member, or through people just popping in to use our hub coffee bar. Without this help and our many volunteer helpers, we simply could not operate. The theatre is a registered charity and depends on public support for projects and improvements beyond its core operations. In addition to the raffle, Ms. Thompson encouraged the community to continue supporting the venue through donations, memberships and regular visits to its coffee bar. Fans of Ollie Day will have another chance to see him perform at the theatre this summer. He will return on Friday, July the 17th, alongside comedy partner Nigel Boy Sire in their Norfolk-themed variety show, If It's Laughter You're After. To find out more about supporting the theatre and to book tickets, visit www.sheringhamlittletheatre.com or call the box office on 01263 822 347.
A British diplomat is set to return to her Norfolk roots after being announced as the new chief executive of the Broads Authority. Sarah Cowley, who most recently served as the deputy head of mission to Madrid, will take over from John Packman, who served in the role for a quarter of a century. However, it will be another 8 months before she replaces him, as she has to fulfil remaining work commitments. While managing the Broads will be quite the departure from her career representing the government overseas, the BA says she will bring an impressive record of leadership and delivery to the post. Miss Cowley, who grew up in Norfolk and is a keen paddleboarder, said, "I'm delighted to be joining the Broads Authority and to have the opportunity to lead the dedicated team in this special place, where land, water, nature and people come together. The Broads is shaped by a remarkable community, from residents to conservation partners, local businesses, to our thousands of boat owners who are essential to the maintaining the waterways. Together, we must conserve and enhance this unique wetland, ensure everyone can access and enjoy the Broads, and safeguard navigation for future generations. Responding and adapting to the challenges and opportunities ahead will require working together with transparency, commitment, innovation and shared expertise. I look forward to listening, learning and leading the authority in the coming years." Her appointment comes after intense speculation as to who will replace Mr. Packman, with factions in the Broads split between those who want to see the new chief prioritise maintaining navigation, the navvies, and others who want more focus given by the BA's environmental duties, the parkies. Harry Blaithwaite, chairman of the Broads Authority, said, "We are absolutely thrilled that Sarah will be joining us as our new chief executive. All six board members involved in the recruitment process believe this to be an outstanding appointment. We are all greatly looking forward to working with Sarah." Alan Goodchild, chairman of the BA's Navigation Committee, said, "Sarah's appreciation of the breadth of interests in the Broads is very evident. She understands the unique opportunities and challenges of looking after a unique navigational area that is not only a much-loved inland waterway and tourism destination, but an internationally important wetland and haven for rare wildlife."
New images have revealed how work is progressing to rectify a series of planning issues discovered at a £6 million Omeys mansion. The company has been forced to make changes to the three-bedroom Larkfields home in Blakeney, which was promoted as the main prize in a comic relief charity competition. An investigation discovered the coastal property had been built differently to the approved plans, sparking a lengthy dispute with North Norfolk District Council. It has meant Omeys has not been able to hand over the keys to the prize winner, Vicky Curtis Cresswell, since March last year, until the issues are fully resolved. The company avoided having to demolish extensions, a swimming pool, garage, and tennis court, built without permission, but under a council ruling in October 2025, granting retrospective permission, it does have to make changes to landscaping. Workers have had to dig up paved areas by hand after officials ruled that the paving risked harming protected pine trees. More planting has been carried out to shield the view of the house from the Blakeney coastal path to avoid harming the conservation area. Omeys called the sprawling coastal home, built to resemble mansions in the Hamptons area of New York, its biggest ever prize, after revealing it as part of a charity draw for Comic Relief last year. But in February 2025, the competition, endorsed by celebrities and the BBC, became embroiled in controversy after it was discovered that the home had not been built to the approved plans. Ms. Curtis Cresswell, 38, from South Wales, won the prize in March, but Omeys has yet to hand over the keys after promising to resolve all planning issues before doing so. She has signalled she plans to sell the property. Larkfields was built by Gough Petroleum owner Michael Gough and his wife Julia in 2020 and sold to Omeys in 2024. The company said it was unaware of any planning issues when concerns were first raised in February.
Cromer's largest producer of dressed crab wants compensation from wind farm operators for a downturn in supply, which it blames on offshore turbines. Jonas Seafood saw its seasonal catch fall by almost a quarter last year, putting the future of the factory at risk. Kevin Jonas, managing director, is now calling for the same compensation that fishermen affected by wind farms have received. Renewable UK disputed his claim, saying independent studies found the impact of projects off the Norfolk coast on shellfish would either be minimal or slightly beneficial, having no significant impact on local commercial fisheries. Jonas Seafood has been producing dressed crab in the town for more than three decades. It processes up to 500 tonnes of locally caught shellfish each year, working with around 35 fishermen along the Norfolk coast from Brancaster to Eccles. But its supply of live crab was down by 120 tonnes last year. The company said fishermen's catches have been in decline ever since the area's first offshore wind farm, Sheringham Shoal, was built around 17 years ago. This, it claims, was made worse by the construction of the Dudgeon Wind Farm, 19 miles off the coast of Cromer, which came online in 2017. When the operation is finished, We plotted an upturn in supply once more, Mr. Jonas said. In this past year, there have been cables coming in from, I think, Hornsey 3, and we've seen a drop-off again, so it's pretty difficult to argue against. It would be devastating if we were to close. We are soldiering on at the moment, but it is cut and dried that we should be part of the deal for the fishing industry. Fishermen affected by wind farms have been awarded compensation guided by the Fishing Liaison with Offshore Wind and Wet Renewables Group, FLOWW. However, it states the impact of wind farms on processing and supply chain businesses is beyond the scope of its guidance, leaving firms like Jonas feeling the pinch. Energy companies operating Norfolk's offshore wind farms dispute claims that projects disrupt marine life, saying the foundations of turbines can support biodiversity by creating artificial reefs. These reef-like environments can attract more crabs and lobsters than flatbed areas of the seabed.
A pensioner facing jail over indecent images of children posed a risk of progressing from online offences to meeting youngsters in person, a court heard. Glenn Cossey, aged 73, pleaded guilty to 7 separate offences of possessing sexual child images and extreme pornography. Norwich Magistrates Court was told the images, including some classified as the most serious type, were found on devices together with messages. District Judge Matthew Bone, the contents of some chats showed that they could be some progress towards contact offences. Cossey of Park Road in Cromer admitted distributing Category A and C images in 2004 and 3 counts of making images in February 2025. He also pleaded guilty to possession of a prohibited image of a child and 4 extreme porn pics that involved horses and dogs. He was committed to be sentenced at Norwich Crown Court on February the 16th and placed on the sex offenders register but bailed. Judge Bone told him, "Be under no illusion that all options are open, including immediate imprisonment. Bail is no indication that you won't go to prison. You may well do."
Tributes have poured in for a dedicated firefighter who devoted his life to the memory of his son after he died while in service during a thatched roof pub fire. William Betts started working at Wroxham Fire Station in 1942 during the Second World War. His son Christopher followed in his footsteps and was also based at Wroxham, but lost his life in the fire at the Checkers pub in Hainford near Norwich in 1987. Paying tribute, Deputy Chief Fire Officer Scott Norman said, "We thank William for his dedicated service and the commitment he and his family have shown to Norfolk Fire and Rescue Service ever since. We know what a heartbreaking tragedy it was to lose Christopher, and we have worked closely with both William and his grandson Marek, along with Colin at Norfolk Fire Museum, over the last year to pay tribute to this ultimate sacrifice. We are very sad to hear of William's passing, but hope they are reunited now." A spokeswoman for the Norfolk Fire and Rescue Service added, "We were saddened to learn of the passing of former Norfolk firefighter William Betts, who died in the early hours of Saturday, January the 10th, aged 98. Mr. Betts was presented with a Long Service and Good Conduct Medal by the Lady Dannett, MBE. Mr. Betts was presented with a Long Service and Good Conduct Medal by the Lady Dannett, MBE, Lord Lieutenant of Norfolk, last summer, for his time in the service, and joined his family for the unveiling of a red plaque at the Checkers pub in honour of his son Christopher in December. William celebrated his 98th birthday 10 days later by taking a flight in a Spitfire, his age not affecting his spirit of adventure. Our thoughts are with his loved ones at this time. Rest in peace, Firefighter Betts. Christopher Betts became the first firefighter to be honoured by a red plaque in his memory. It was unveiled at the Chequers pub in Hainford, the site of Mr. Betts' final call in 1987. It was around 4 a.m. on the morning of December the 1st, and he was working on the first floor of the building, dampening down the fire, when without warning the central chimney stack collapsed. He was trapped underneath the rubble, and was eventually freed by his colleagues, many working with their bare hands. However, he was pronounced dead on arrival at hospital. 38 years on from the tragedy, the plaque honouring Christopher was unveiled by his father. It was part of a scheme by the Fire Brigades Union to recognise those who have lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Chief Fire Officer Scott Norman added, "I hope Chris is smiling down on us here today, remembering the team he will always be a part of. He is remembered with fondness."
Too many people receiving end-of-life care are dying in Norfolk and Waveney's hospitals when they'd rather spend their final days elsewhere, health bosses have said. Health chiefs said recruitment and training gaps among staff to support people to die in their homes and a shortage of specialist hospice beds in the region was contributing to palliative care patients not always being able to die in their preferred place. More than 40% of patients receiving palliative care die in Norfolk's hospitals, 30% at home, 25% in care homes, and fewer than 5% in hospices. But only 44% of those who passed away in hospitals had previously stated that was their preferred place to die. The matter was discussed at a meeting of Norfolk's Health Overview Select Committee, made up of representatives from the county's councils. Dr. Frankie Swords, Executive Medical Director of the Norfolk and Waveney Integrated Care Board, said, "This is a huge and growing issue. About 1% of our population dies each year, and the people who die are mainly older people with multiple long-term conditions, heart disease, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and cancer. In Norfolk and Waveney, that's about 12,500 deaths. The largest number of these deaths do occur in our hospitals, which we know is frequently not where people, given the choice, would like to receive their end-of-life care." She said there was a need to upskill the NHS workforce so they could better support people to die at home. She said some £32.7 million was being spent each year on end-of-life care, but that a review had found provision is not what we would want it to be. Dr. Sword said there was a shortage of specialist palliative care beds, with only 22 in Norfolk, when up to 67 were needed. She said the findings of the review would be used to work with providers, such as hospices, hospitals and community hospitals, to come up with a completely new model of commissioning services. One project which will assist, she said, was a new hospice in Galston to be run by St. Elizabeth Hospice. You're listening to edition number 2001 of The Mardler, recorded on Friday, 23rd of January, 2026. Still to come, there are items about a bitter family feud, retirement plans in tatters, plans to scrap A-levels at Norfolk Sixth Form, the future of a rapidly growing Norfolk town, and of course the Mardler magazine supplement. But before all that, some local events. The National Theatre live screening of Hamlet at 7 o'clock Trunch, directed by Robert Hastie from the National Theatre, optional fish and chips, St Nicholas Church, Trunch Road, Swayfield, North Walsham. Tickets £10 from Tim Payne, T-I-M-P-A-Y-N-E, at mac.com, 01692 402 624. Norwich Social Club presents Peter Barlow at 8:30 p.m. Club Now on Fridays. Live music, dance floor, doors 7 p.m. Phone for table bookings and further details. Pinch's Q Club and the venue, 85 Barker Street, Norwich, 01603 622 427. Saturday the 31st of January, live at Cromer Social Club, Soft Phenomena at 8:30 p.m. Live band, playing music by Creedence Clearwater Revival, Dr. Feelgood, Small Faces, Joe Cocker and others. Cromer Social Club, One the Croft, Cromer. Contact larry.r.d.56@gmail.com, 07414 623 855, and Class Act, live music at 8:45 p.m. Arkwright's, Hobart Square, off Hall Road, Norwich.
Sunday, 1st of February, Norfolk and Waveney Mind Sea Splash 2026. At 10 a.m, £15 on the day, £10 advance. www.norfolkandwaveneymind.org.uk. Norfolk and Waveney Mind's Sea Splash is back for another year on Sunday, 1st of February, making big waves at Cromer Beach for local mental health services. Ages 16 plus, under 18s must be accompanied by an adult. Cromer Beach, Runton Road, Cromer. Tuesday, 3rd of February, Loddon Flower Club, 7 p.m, doors 6:30 p.m, visitors £7.50. Talk by Rosemary Ward, Flowers for Summer Colour, all welcome. St John's Church, George Lane, Norwich. Loddon Flower Club at gmail.com, 01508 480522. Thursday, 5th of February, Sherlock Holmes and the Hound of the Basket Cases, 7:30 p.m, £10, www.thorpe-players.co.uk, 5th to 7th of February. A pantomime with a difference, an unfamiliar title, yet a familiar story starring Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson. Roxley Hall, 66 Yarmouth Road, Thorpe, St Andrew, Norwich. Jan W at btinternet.com, 07462 2800854. Friday, 6th of February, Spike of the Choir Boys, 7:30 p.m, Cromer Community Centre, Garden Street, Cromer. Saturday, 7th of February, Georgia Shackleton with Aaron Bennett, live music gig, 7:30 p.m, £15. Georgia returns to Deepdale for an exclusive sitting room session. Be one of 40 people to enjoy beautiful music from this incredibly talented violin musician. Deepdale Camping and Rooms, 1 Deepdale Granary, Burnham Deepdale. Stay at deepdalecamping.co.uk, 01485 210256.
Sunday the 8th of February, Starling's Toys Trading Card Show. Trade, buy and sell to add to your collection. Pokemon, One Piece and more. Other retro toys too. It's from 9 a.m. in the morning to 4 p.m. Tickets are on sale at the cost of £5 and are available from alex.clark@starlings.co.uk. Alex is A-L-L-E-X. On 07738689508. A winter residential sewing retreat, starting at 3:30 p.m. on the 10th of February, through to the 12th of February. The cost is £598. Booking is essential. www.cromaseamstress.co.uk. This exceptional venue offers the perfect backdrop for creativity and relaxation. Choose from 9 unique bedrooms with the option to add a non-sewing guest. Space is available for up to 12 participants in the sewing room at Chaucer Barn, Holt Road, Gresham. Contact Katie at cromaseamstress.co.uk.
We turn now to this week's Mardler magazine supplement, where we hear about iconic designs in Norfolk churches, the lasting romance of love letters, the tale of Branodunum, low pollutant levels in the River Bure.
Iconic designs in Norfolk churches. The life and art of William Morris showcased through exquisite stained glass in this historic county. Born in Walthamstow, Essex on 24th of March 1834, William Morris was a remarkable man who exemplified the term polymath. He was an artist, designer, romance writer, poet and staunch socialist reformer whose diverse talents continue to inspire and delight today. The son of a successful city broker, Morris was born into wealth and enjoyed a privileged upbringing at his family's grand home, Woodford Estate. This affluent environment gave him the resources to explore his passion for creativity and pursue artistic endeavours. Childhood visits to cathedrals, particularly the magnificent Canterbury Cathedral, instilled in him a deep admiration for intricate design and elegant iconography. Morris studied classics at Oxford's Exeter College in 1852 with the intention to take holy orders and enter into a life of religious devotion after his graduation. However, his path changed when he met Edward Burne Jones, a gifted artist who became a lifelong friend. They moved to London together in 1856, and when unable to find furnishings that suited their taste, they set about designing their own. Morris fell deeply in love with Jane Burden, an artist's muse, and they married in 1859, despite his family's concern about their suitability given his wealth and background. After moving into their arts and crafts style home, Red House, Morris founded his interiors company, Morris, Marshall, Faulkner & Co., Morris & Co., with members of his artistic circle. Their aim was to produce everything needed to decorate a home, including tiles, wallpaper, fabric and stained glass. Norfolk, known as the County of Churches, boasts more historically important and beautifully preserved examples than anywhere else in the country. By the late 19th century, many had fallen into disrepair and required extensive restoration. Morris & Co. was commissioned to produce striking stained glass windows for some of these projects, several of which survive today. The Church of St. Mary in Antingham underwent major renovations in 1865, with windows from the firm of William Morris included in the work. The most intricate depicts the Blessed Virgin Mary with St. Mary Magdalene and St. Martha. Each panel is attributed to a different artist within the collective. St. Mary Magdalene was designed by William Morris, St. Martha by Dante Gabriel Rossetti, and the Virgin Mary by Edward Burne Jones. In the vibrant seaside town of Cromer, the Church of St. Peter and St. Paul contains a stunning east window crafted by Morris and Co. The glass was repaired following air raid damage in 1942, and although officially attributed to Edward Burne Jones, it's likely Morris collaborated closely on the design. St. Mary and All Saints Church in Sculthorpe also underwent renovations in the 1860s. The south wall of the chancel features two panels dating from 1864 to 65 by Ford Madox Brown, another noted artist in Morris's circle. They depict Christ walking on the water and Christ watching the disciples in a storm in a kaleidoscope of colour and light, typical of the style of Morris and Co. The east wall of the church's south aisle features a design of Faith, Hope and Charity by Edward Burne Jones, dating from around 1 year later. Burne Jones created several artworks depicting these three iconic figures, of which this is thought to be the earliest. Far away from this charming corner of Norfolk, the design was reused in 1873 for the north transept of the chapel of Jesus College in Cambridge. Together with an exquisite ceiling mural painted by Morris, the college chapel is considered to be the pinnacle of Morris and Co.'s work. The firm worked industriously to produce 41 wallpaper designs and 5 ceiling papers, which were used to decorate many of England's most prominent estates, including Castle Howard and Naworth Castle. Their most prestigious commission ran from 1866 to 1881 and included the majority of the rooms in St. James Palace. William Morris's artistic career spanned from private homes to places of worship, from royal commissions to serious consideration for the post of Poet Laureate, a position that eventually went to Alfred Austin, although it was widely thought that Morris was Queen Victoria's favourite. In 1896, at the age of 62, the flame of his incredible talent finally burnt out. William Morris died on 3rd of October at his London residence of Kelmscott House. The attending doctor simply described his cause of death as from being William Morris and having done more work than 10 men. He left behind a legacy of beauty and creativity that remains just as inspiring today as it was in his lifetime. In his own famous words, "Have nothing in your house that you do not know to be useful or believe to be beautiful."
The Lasting Romance of Love Letters. As Valentine's Day approaches, Norfolk's love-filled history reminds us of the beauty that lingers in the written word. This year, around 25 million Valentine's cards will be exchanged across the country, each one a small yet meaningful token of affection and commitment. Love is still all around us, though the way we choose to express it has shifted. Our innermost feelings are now less often sealed in envelopes and carried tenderly by hand. They're more often tapped out on screens as words that vanish almost as soon as they appear. In centuries past, handcrafted letters bound sweethearts together. Thoughtful, passionate, and enduring, they were a tradition that gradually faded. Yet the story may not be over. A recent post office poll revealed 77% of people believe love letters are making a comeback, restoring the personal touch missing from so many modern celebrations. The greatest challenge, of course, is knowing what to write. Many feel out of practice, unsure how to capture their emotions on paper. Yet romantics need look no further than Norfolk for inspiration, where the oldest surviving Valentine's letter in English was written in the charming village of Topcroft. In 1477, Marjorie Bruce penned a passionate note to her fiancé, John Paston III, addressing him as my right well beloved Valentine, she offered not only a tender declaration, but also a rare glimpse into life in the 15th century. Her words became one of the most cherished phrases from the historic Paston letters, inspiring lovers for centuries. Marjorie's letter is just one of more than 1,000 in what is regarded as the largest archive of private correspondence from the 15th century. Published in 1787 by John Fenn of Dereham, the volumes chronicled the everyday lives of a medieval Norfolk family. Since then, her poetic persuasion has captivated romantics everywhere, proving how words endure long after those who wrote them. Norfolk's great hero, Admiral Lord Horatio Nelson, also left behind powerful letters of affection. His most famous were not written to his wife Fanny, but to Lady Emma Hamilton, with whom he shared a passionate and scandalous affair. Few of Emma's letters survive. Nelson destroyed them following his separation from Fanny, but many of his own expressions of love remain. In one letter from 1799, a year after the affair is believed to have begun, he confessed, "I can neither eat nor sleep for thinking of you, my dearest Emma." Controversial though the relationship was, his words leave no doubt about the depth of his devotion. For poetic inspiration, visitors can turn to Felbrigg Hall, where a candid poem is inscribed in the butler's pantry, etched with painstaking care into glass by William Wyndham, its tutor, Benjamin Stillingfleet. It was a heartfelt declaration to local beauty, Anne Barnes. This unusual gesture reminds us that even the most unexpected expressions of love can carry profound meaning. Norfolk's hidden messengers are not confined to stately homes. In 2015, a love letter was discovered inside a secret compartment of a Singer sewing machine donated to a Norwich charity shop. Hidden for nearly 5 decades, the note revealed a tender exchange between a soldier and his wife, a reminder of how such correspondence sustained hope during the hardships of wartime separation. For those wishing to read such touching words firsthand, RAF Olton Museum at Blickling Estate displays letters sent home by stationed aircrew during World War II. Among them is correspondence from Warrant Officer Maurice Charles White to his wife Doreen, which came to light in 2004 after her passing. "Well, old dearest, it's only 25 days now before I see you again, darling. Won't that be grand, sweetheart?" he writes lovingly on one occasion. In another, returning from leave, he speaks of his children with tender affection. "Give them a kiss for me, dearest. By the way, sweet, did they miss me at all? I think Jeff did a little, as he didn't want me to go away." Unedited and raw, these letters capture not only the immediacy of longing and love, but also offer a moving glimpse into Maurice's heart and the emotions he felt in that exact moment. Decades later, his words still convey the loneliness of a man devoted to his wife and 2 young sons. With so many surviving examples of historic love letters, inspiration is never far away. Perhaps this Valentine's Day will awaken a new generation of romantic wordsmiths, ensuring that today's love stories are preserved for future generations to discover.
Buried Secrets, The Tale of Branagh Dunham. 13 years after Time Team first explored the Roman fort of Branagh Dunham at Brancaster, a return visit unearthed fresh insights that could transform our understanding of this ancient site. Once a formidable military stronghold guarding the Wash, Brannadunum formed a vital part of the Roman Empire's coastal defences. Today, little remains above ground beyond a raised grassy outline, but the land still hums with life. Skylarks and insects have found a haven in this lush habitat, echoing the rhythms of nature that Roman soldiers would have known only 2 millennia ago. Standing on the site with Brancaster to the west and the coastline stretching north, it's easy to picture the bustle of military life. Soldiers drilling, traders going about their business, and the fort alive with movement and purpose. Now, under the care of the National Trust, Brannadunum was first identified in 1846, with its construction dated between 225 and 250 AD. Thanks to early discoveries and later excavations, including a 2012 dig featured on the popular TV series Time Team, we can begin to picture the fort in its full glory. Built in the classic Roman castrum style, Brannadunum featured a rectangular layout designed for defence and efficiency. Its rounded corners, 10-foot-wide walls, interval turrets, and earthen ramparts offered strength and strategic advantage, allowing easy access to the battlements. 4 gates, one on each side, and a V-shaped ditch underscored the Romans' mastery of engineering and organisation. The Time Team's 2012 survey revealed more than just structural details. Through 5 trenches and geophysical mapping, the crew discovered previously unknown buildings, vast granaries, barrack blocks, and even a possible bathhouse. These finds offer a vivid glimpse into the lives of those who lived and worked within the fort's walls. Interestingly, the project also uncovered artifacts that predate the fort's construction, notes Angus Wainwright, an archaeologist at the National Trust. Alongside Roman coins, numerous pieces of pottery and glass were found, hinting at an even deeper history. With so many secrets still buried beneath the soil, and a tapestry of tales left to unfold, Time Team returned in September 2025, with specialised ground-penetrating radar, GPR, equipment to investigate previously unexplored areas of the site. "I'm pleased that Time Team came back to Brannadunum," Angus continues. "The geophysics results from 2012 were some of the best I've ever seen, so it was really frustrating that it was only possible to survey part of the fort. GPR was still emerging in archaeology back then, and this was one of the biggest surveys ever attempted. The sheer volume of data the machine produced overwhelmed the computer and the software collapsed. Today's technology tells a different story. With sharper resolution, enhanced imaging, deeper signal penetration, and AI-powered data analysis, modern GPR systems can process billions of data points with ease." "This time, the equipment should reveal even more," Angus explains. "Time Team will share the full details of their findings this year, and we're hopeful there will be plenty to keep Roman fort experts busy for a long time." Early results shared by Time Team geophysicist Jimmy Adcock suggest the site is brimming with potential. "We aimed to produce a complete interior map, and given how little disturbance there's been, hoped to capture a textbook Roman fort of the Saxon shore. We didn't expect much of the sudden magnetic survey due to the lack of crop marks, but we were in for a surprise." The team's expectations were quickly exceeded. Some results matched what we anticipated, but many went far beyond. Jimmy adds, "Let's just say, if we return to excavate, we won't be short of work." Beyond the fort's walls, the surveys offer new perspectives on the surrounding landscape and population, challenging long-held assumptions about how these forts functioned and developed over time. The recent geophysical and landscape analysis provides a fantastic foundation for future research and site management, Jimmy concludes. It also feeds into broader studies of Roman coastal defence. It's incredibly exciting. Whatever discoveries lie ahead, Brannadunum's legacy as a Roman treasure continues to inspire. Its story, etched into Norfolk soil, will endure for generations to come, and the next chapter may be just beneath the surface.
Testing reveals low pollutant concentrations in the River Bure. According to the Bure River Action Group, the water quality in the Bure River, which passes through Elsham, is considered pretty good. However, the invasive signal crayfish may pose a greater threat to the river. Since January last year, the group has been testing the river as part of the National Trust's Riverlands project, which includes weekly water testing for phosphates and ammonia at four sites: Dunkirk Meadows in Aylsham, the Borough next to Aylsham footbridge on the Bure, and on the Mermaid at Marsham and Borough. Alex Christie Miller, who's been conducting the monitoring alongside Action Group Chairman Chris Williams, noted, "Overall, these figures are quite good. Although these results differ from many people's anecdotal views of the river's health in recent years, it's reassuring that pollutants are not responsible for the river's current issues." Over 8 months of weekly testing, average phosphate PO4-P levels were 0.051 milligrams per litre at Dunkirk and 0.058 milligrams per litre at Borough. The Mermaid showed 0.045 milligrams per litre at Marsham and 0.05 milligrams per litre at Borough. Ammonia levels were 0.005, 0.013, 0.077 and 0.022 milligrams per litre, respectively. The data indicates that pollutant levels in the river fall within the good or high ecological range for phosphates. Only ammonia levels at the Mermaid in Marsham exceeded this range. The Mermaid is notably cleaner at Borough than at Marsham, possibly due to stream restoration efforts upstream of Borough a few years ago by the Norfolk River's Internal Drainage Board, which has helped improve water quality. Alex from Borough and Chris from Aylsham, who helped establish the Action Group in 2024, are dedicated to collecting this data to compensate for reduced monitoring by the Environment Agency. Collecting the data is also essential, given the planned housing expansion in Aylsham, as it will provide a baseline to assess any impact new developments might have on the river, Alex explained. Alex also mentioned that the data did not show a significant effect from the Aylsham sewage works, but the testing schedule and distances from the outlow might have missed specific pollution events. Chris and Alex believe that other chemicals released in treated sewage or from other sources may be harming the river, and suspect that invasive signal crayfish could be contributing. These crayfish directly affect invertebrate populations and cause excessive turbidity, which inhibits plant growth, by burrowing into and eroding the riverbanks over time, they said. Chris and Alex would welcome funding for additional testing equipment and reagents to expand their work and invite others to join as regular volunteers. Currently, weekly testing takes between 2 and 3 hours, about an hour for sample collection, and 1 or 2 hours for testing. Anyone interested in participating can email connect@burerriveraction.co.uk.
And those items conclude this week's magazine supplement. Our thanks go to the authors of these articles for their contributions.
Returning to the news, our penultimate selection of articles includes A Bitter Family Feud, Body of Man Found, Retirement Plans in Tatters, Plans to Scrap A-Levels at Sixth Form, School Plans Pressure, Fishermen Fight for Their Livelihood, The Future of a Rapidly Growing Norfolk Town, A Darkly Comic Tale in Sheringham Little Theatre.
A Bitter Family Feud has seen a man arrested at his mother's funeral before being accused of threatening to poison his sister. Simon Bass, 65, is said to have made death threats while in custody at Aylsham Police Station after being detained when police were called to the ceremony on January 14th. He had earlier failed to attend a court hearing over previous allegations of assault and harassment against family members. It followed an acrimonious six-month dispute that had seen him evicted from the family home where he had been caring for his mother, Norwich Magistrates Court heard. Prosecutors said his sister had been too scared to attend the funeral. Bass, of Main Road in Filby, pleaded not guilty to making threats to kill, including using poison plants. He also denied assault by beating on May 28th last year and a campaign of harassment involving unwanted visits and calls. Defence solicitor Ralph Gillam said there had been a significant family rift and that his implausible remarks were made in the context of his mother's death. Bass elected for his case to be heard at Norwich Crown Court with an initial hearing on February 12th.
The body of a man in his 80s was found on a Norfolk beach this week. The discovery was made on the seafront in Cromer, near the town's pier, on Thursday, January the 15th. The emergency services, including two search and rescue helicopters, were sent to the scene shortly before 10 a.m. A spokeswoman for Norfolk Police said, "Police were called to Cromer Pier at 9:47 a.m. on Thursday, January the 15th, following reports of a concern for safety. Officers attended the scene alongside fire, ambulance and Coast Guard. Sadly, a man aged in his 80s was pronounced dead at the scene. His next of kin have been informed. The death is not being treated as suspicious, and a file will be prepared for the coroner."
They say owning a boat is like standing in a cold shower while tearing up £10 notes. But one boat owner fears he may well have thrown hundreds of thousands of pounds down the drain while still on dry land after a misjudged investment in a luxury Norfolk Broads boathouse. John Atkins' retirement plans have been left in tatters after buying what he hoped would be his nest egg in the village of Horning. The property developer from Hertfordshire invested in a £440,000 boat shed, which included accommodation, he thought, could be used overnight. His plan was to use the one-bed facility as a holiday let, which he could rent out to visitors to the Broads, a place he has grown to love after visiting for several years. The income would have helped support his retirement plans to move to the Norfolk Broads and spend his days out on the water. But unfortunately for Mr. Atkins, 65, has since fallen foul of the Broads Authority's strict planning rules for the village, which mean no one is permitted to stay overnight in it. He's now exploring what other options are available and still hopes a different tactic can gain permission for the boathouse to be used as a home. Otherwise, he worries he will be forced to sell the property at a significantly lower price. The rules were in place at the time he bought the boathouse, but Mr. Atkins feels he was misinformed about the prospect of being able to stay there by people he had consulted before the purchase. Government officials have also ruled against a recent appeal by Mr. Atkins, attempting to overturn the BA's refusal of permission for the boathouse to be used as a home. He's now considering his next steps and is seeking professional planning advice to see what use could be possible. But to really rub salt into the wound, he has still been having to pay a 100% tax premium on the property due to a second home levy. I have been told I can't live in it, but North Norfolk District Council are still happy to charge me double council tax, Mr. Atkins said. Despite his boathouse folly, Mr. Atkins is still looking forward to moving permanently to the Norfolk Broads to enjoy his retirement, he says, after having worked hard all his life in the building trade. He is currently working on finishing the house of his own dreams nearby and will soon move in. He added that he has no hard feelings towards the BA, understanding its strict policies are there to protect the environment from harm.
Parents have slammed an Education Trust's announcement to scrap A-levels at a Norfolk sixth form just weeks after sending acceptance letters. The shock news that Sheringham Sixth Form would not be running any Year 12 A-level courses from September 2026 has sparked outrage by parents across North Norfolk. Synergy Multi-Academy Trust, which runs the school, announced the decision in an email sent out to the parents and children of Sheringham High School. However, for Year 11 pupils currently attending other secondary schools, but who'd been accepted in the Sixth Form's 2026 cohort, it was not until yesterday that they received the email too. One parent, whose child goes to Cromer High School, said, "We heard nothing from Sheringham, but my son's school rang to tell us. There was no warning, it's been really badly managed." The Trust has said the students will be able to transfer their application to Reefham College, where transport will be provided following a route with stops at Cromer, Sheringham and Holt. The parent, who doesn't want to be named, added, "To offer them places, then just move them to another school is unfair. It doesn't seem like they've thought about the kids. Also, how much space does Reefham have?" In an original email sent to parents by Alistair Ogle, the Trust's chief executive officer, it said a sixth form needs at least 100 students per year to be financially viable under Department of Education guidance. But this year, the sixth form said only 50 students were projected to join the 2026 cohort, which led to the decision to close it down. In a statement by the Trust to this paper, it said, "Many schools and trusts are facing significant challenges due to increasing costs and a decline in the number of pupils in Norfolk, which is set to continue for at least the next 5 years. This picture is not unique to Synergy and is mirrored in schools across the county. Options include reductions in staffing, alterations to management structures, and reducing non-staff costs wherever possible. We understand these changes may cause concern for staff, parents, and pupils, but our focus is on ensuring we continue to provide excellent teaching and learning across all Synergy schools. Current Year 13 students at the sixth form will continue their studies as planned and will not be impacted by these changes. The sixth form will continue to run the Year 12 Motor Vehicle Studies course and Health and Social Care course from September, subject to a suitable number of applicants. The Trust also claims to develop a Centre of Vocational Excellence at Sheringham Sixth Form in line with the Government's new curriculum, which will be implemented from September 2028. The news comes at the same time Synergy Multi-Academy Trust announced its plans to shut Corpusty Primary School, based between Aylsham and Holt, and merge it with other sites. A letter that was sent to parents outlines a consultation to amalgamate the school with either Reefham Primary, 5.5 miles away, or Gresham School, more than 7 miles away.
Pressure is mounting on council officials to move forward with plans to relocate and double the size of a Norfolk school. North Norfolk MP Stephen Aquarone has issued a new plea to Norfolk County Council to act on its plans for Holt Primary School's move, which was put on hold last year. County Hall had said declining birth rates mean there is no current need for the change, which would have seen the school move from Norwich Road to Beresford Road. But Mr Aquarone has said that the current primary school is facing an increasing number of issues that need to be fixed, and has urged for the scheme to go ahead. He has posted a video on social media where he is encouraging members of the community to sign a petition to take the campaign to the County Council. He said in the post, "Holt's children can't wait any longer. Families were promised a new primary school. Year after year, Conservative-run Norfolk County Council drags its feet. Enough talk. Build the school now. I'm calling on the County Council to get on with it, and I need your voice behind this." The plans would have seen the school double in size from 210 places to 420 places at a likely cost of about £13 million. As part of a planning application linked to the construction of new homes, £1 million has been set aside towards the school. In the petition, Mr Aquarone said, "A growing town deserves a proper school that can meet current and future needs and keep children learning close to home, not waiting for places elsewhere. By signing this petition, you're calling on Norfolk County Council to prioritise delivery of a new primary school in Holt, secure the funding and commitment needed now, and ensure children in our community aren't left behind. To sign the petition, go to the North Norfolk and Great Yarmouth Liberal Democrats website."
Fishermen whose livelihood was threatened by a planning row with holiday homeowners are celebrating after fighting off attempts to limit the use of their yard. The Clark family, who have fished off Sea Pauling for 3 generations, have been granted permission to continue using their base in the Marrams. It follows a lengthy wrangle with North Norfolk District Council, which was triggered following complaints from the owners of a group of homes next door. The holiday home owners said the neighbouring yard had expanded and the use of the site had intensified, causing them disturbance. A further accusation levelled at the fishermen was that hardcore surfacing laid down at the yard had caused surface water to flood the properties. But this was dismissed by the Clarks, who said a burst water main and exceptional levels of rainfall were to blame. The bitter battle between the holiday home owners and fishermen left them fearing for the future of their livelihood. However, council officials have granted retrospective planning permission for the changes at the site, which has come as a huge relief for the group. Richard Clark, one of the fishermen, said, "This has been going on for 4 years, so it's a huge relief to have got permission. We can now carry on fishing as we have done for decades here. That is all we have ever wanted to do. It has been a very stressful time. Fighting this has also cost us a lot of trouble and expense." After the dispute was made public, the fishermen received a huge outpouring of support, with hundreds of people writing to the council. Mr Clark added, "All the support we have received has been brilliant, particularly the parish council. It really shows how strong the community is here." Mr Clark says while relations have been tense with the family that owns the holiday homes, he is willing to put any bad feeling aside. He said, "If they want to come and shake my hand, I will happily do so, so we can move on. Life is too short to worry about it now."
The historic market town of Aylsham has been facing increasing pressure as it rapidly grows with the new developments. Like many communities across Norfolk, the town is set to see significant housing growth over the coming years, bringing a host of challenges for local schools, doctors, transport and parking. And now Aylsham Town Council has invited locals to have their own say on the matter and to shape the town's future. The consultation will explore a range of pressing topics which have caused concern for many in the area, such as new housing developments. Last year, a bid for 242 homes and a new primary school was approved by Broadland Council, and the year before, a proposal for another 252 houses and a 90-bed care home was also approved. Combined, these developments could see its population grow by nearly 1,000. Dr. Nazia Ahmed, a GP in the town, previously warned existing patients would suffer as the surgeries would not be able to withstand this pressure. The town council said that many locals said they hate the new housing in the town, so it's asking questions around for the exact reasons why. Some of the other issues that may be discussed include the car-centred design, pedestrian access, pavements and the availability of green and open spaces. It's also keen to know what locals think should be done to improve the quality of life in the town and what should or should not happen in the as the town continues to grow. For example, the town council has asked whether the town should not be allowed to cross over the A140. It also questioned whether the town should prevent the selling of the riverbanks so that a developer can offer riverfront properties. The consultation will be held at the Live Well for Less event at Aylsham Town Hall on Friday, January the 31st, where councillors will be available to discuss ideas and priorities between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m.
A darkly comic tale is set to take the stage in Sheringham with a Victorian twist. Oscar Wilde's Lord Arthur Savile's Crime will be performed by the Little Theatre Players at Sheringham Little Theatre from March 11th to 14th. The story follows a noble but naive lord who, after a palm reader predicts he must commit a murder before marrying his fiancée, embarks on a series of comically disastrous murder attempts. The cast includes Torrin Beatty as Lord Arthur, Anna Ryan as Sybil Merton, Rod Feistinger as Butler Baines, and Peter Blakely as anarchist Herr Winkelkopf. Other cast members include Robert Briggs as palmist Septimus R. Podgers, Janet Hignett as Lady Clementina Beecham, and Steve Saunders as the Dean of Paddington. Hazel Martin, director of the production, said, "The play stands the test of time thanks to Wilde's clever writing. It's wonderful to see the cast bringing the script to life in rehearsals. It is a joy." Tickets are available via sheringhamlittletheatre.com or by calling 01263 822 347.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of The Mardler, with readings from the North Norfolk News. If you have any comments or queries, you can contact our listener liaison officer, Imogen Waterson, on 01263 587 610.
Perhaps we should just mention that if you have a smartphone, tablet or computer, or know someone who has, you can listen to this and other editions online at mardler.org.uk. You can also use an Alexa smart speaker, a variety of smartphone apps, or even a telephone call to listen. Find out the details on our website, mardler.org.uk.
We rely on receiving your returned memory sticks and pouches so that we can continue to send you new editions each week. So please remember to return the pouch and memory stick promptly, making sure to reverse the address label first.
The sound engineer today was Richard Preston. Editing and producing this issue was Manny Gomez. Our colleagues in the copying and dispatch room join us in wishing you the best of health, and we look forward to joining you again in a week's time. But for now, it's
cheerio! Thank you.